stainless steel, known for being shiny. Famous for no stains. Nobody thinks much about it, so let's have some fun. Let's find out why stainless steel is secretly incredibly fascinating. Welcome to a whole new podcast episode, a podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt, and I'm not alone. Two wonderful guests this week. I'm joined by Joey Clift and Nneka Fitzclark. Joey is a frequent guest on the show. You may remember him from one of the first ever episodes about microwave ovens. He was also on a more recent episode about Antarctica, and he also contributed some research to that one, which was great, really helpful. And Joey is a writer for the upcoming Netflix animated show, Spirit Rangers. That's a fantasy adventure show mainly aimed at kids, has an all-native writer's room, and it just looks really good. Like, the art looks amazing, and I can't wait to see it. I hope you check out Spirit Rangers later this year, 2022. And then Nneka Fitzclark is a new guest. She was a longtime co-host of Minority Corner, which was a great podcast. It's Corner with a K. It's on the Maximum Fun Network, and they did 350 episodes just wrapped recently. She's also a professional librarian in her, not spare time, just career time, and an absolute blast to talk to. Also, I've gathered all of our zip codes and used internet resources like native-land.ca to acknowledge that I recorded this on the traditional land of the Canarsie and Lenape peoples. Acknowledge Joey recorded this on the traditional land of the Gabrielina Wartongva and Keech and Chumash peoples. Acknowledge Nneka recorded this on the traditional land of the Muwekma and Ohlone peoples. And acknowledge that in all of our locations, Native people are very much still here. That feels worth doing on each episode. And today's episode is about stainless steel, which is the top patron-chosen topic for the month of July. Many, many thanks to friend of the show, Roger Sobey, for that wonderful suggestion. Thank you, Roger. Yet another great idea from you folks. We have all heard of stainless steel, and I barely even knew what it was before researching this. Right? It's all over my world. Now I get to know what the heck is going on with it and why it is the title of this podcast. So please sit back or stare at your reflection in the shiny tines of a fork because you want a very challenging reflection situation. Either way, here's this episode of Secretly Incredibly Fascinating with Joey Clift and Nneka Fitzclark. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. Nneka, Joey, it is so good to have you both. And of course, I always start by asking guests their relationship to the topic or opinion of it. Either of you can start, but how do you feel about stainless steel?
Okay, so my opinion of the topic is I don't like it one bit. You think think you're too good for stains? What's your problem, steel? You big shot metal, you. My connection to stainless steel, I had to think about this one a little bit, and I think that where I landed after looking at the Wikipedia page is stainless steel. There was some involvement between stainless steel and Sheffield, England. I think that might have been a prominent origin location for stainless steel. And yeah. When I was wrapping up college, I was one of those jerks that decided that I wanted to do like a study abroad. So I you know, took out $20,000 worth of student loan debt just to do this study abroad in the financially prominent and great times of 2009. So that was probably a bad move.
Yes.
And and my parents, like, you know, like, I love my parents, but they're not very like traveled people. They haven't traveled around the world. They haven't been to a ton of countries outside of the United States. So I think that this was like a stressful thing for them that, you know, their little, I'm the youngest, their little baby boy was leaving the country. So I remember the day that my dad was driving me to SeaTac Airport in Washington to drop me off in his work truck, you know, with my backpack and my passport, you know, ready to leave the country for a couple months. After we hugged, said we loved each other, I started walking toward the terminal, and then he stopped me, and then he gave me, like, a Sheffield pocket knife.
Oh.
And I have no idea why he gave this to me other than him just being like, you're going to need this in Europe, son.
Defense, man.
I mean, it wasn't one of those things where it's like, okay, dad. And then I like put it in my backpack and was like, all right, cool. I guess I have this pocket knife in England. And it's like a little baby. It's like an inch and a half or something like that. Mm. But it's like, I didn't really use it for anything when I was in England other than just like opening cans of soda. Cause I have baby fingers that bruise easy.
Yeah, that's such a European connection, right? Like, here's a European knife for going to Europe. You'll need one of their weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely like, oh, yeah, this thing does, like, +2 damage against the queen or something.
Hey, yeah. Final boss.
Yeah, I need to ask my dad, like, why did you give me that knife? Did you want me to, like, fight the queen or something? I don't know. What was this for?
Maybe pass down, you know? Could have been, like, your ancient... Maybe you are the direct heir to stainless steel. You never know. That pocket knife could be.
I wish. I'm a Native American, so I don't think I'm the direct heir to stainless steel, but I look... They owe us. They owe me for taking my people's land. They owe me just like 5% ownership over this garbage metal.
One pocket knife at a time.
Yes, exactly.
I have no relation. I mean, like, wow, how do I follow that? I was just going to say pots and pans and cheap jewelry. That's the only thing that I think of.
Wait, can you buy stainless steel jewelry? Is that a thing?
All the backings to earrings, like the ones that aren't going to turn your ears green, from what I remember. You got to look and it's like stainless steel and you're like, okay, this is going to last me at least 2 months from Claire's, you know? Like that's the kind of thing that you look for, is like a stainless steel kind of at least dipped in or covered in or something. Like stainless steel is going to keep you protected from the green, and then pots and pans. Always, I notice with stainless steel, they do get stained. Like, using water droplets on stainless steel. Like, I'm never, like, pulling out a stainless steel pot and being like, wow, this flash is so bright. My eyes, I need sunglasses. Like, no. They get drippy, too. And as a librarian, I wanted to be surprised. I've listened to the show. I want to hear all the facts. So I did look at the Wikipedia page quickly, very quickly.
All right.
And then shielded my eyes. And I was like, I'm going to go in and be surprised by Alex.
Oh, thank you both for being so interested in like a little background and also surprise. I love it. That's great.
Yeah, I got to say, to stainless steel getting stained, what a garbage metal this is. No, no. Stainless steel is trash.
What are you doing, stainless steel? Lies.
That makes so much sense, the earrings application. I did not know that. Like, of course, this is a perfect model for that. Because I think I basically had no relation to it going into this. And also discovered early on in the research that basically stainless steel was a more sellable name than rustless steel. Some of the first people selling this called it rustless steel. And that's like accurate. It. But I think people don't like thinking about rust. So they came up with this cool... kind of not accurate name instead.
Oh, right from the beginning, deception.
Yeah. Now I gotta say, what's this steel's problem with rust?
Yeah.
Tetanus? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah, tetanus, yeah. I guess. That's a fair thing, reason to not want rust, yes.
Just a thought.
Like, all medicine is political now. Half of people are just like, I guess I'm pro tetanus. I don't know. Seems like we gotta divide everything. So
yeah. Rest for all. Rest for all.
Yeah. Yo, penicillin. What's your problem with germs? Yeah.
Get out of my mold, penicillin.
Yeah, what's your problem with mold? Yeah.
And also, I have begun to think about this substance because it was a patron pick for this week. Thank you, patrons. And in particular, Roger Sobey, And he lives in a town in Indiana that's a center of stainless steel cutlery. But then also, I think a lot of people voted for this because we recently did an episode about Swiss Army knives, which ties back into Joey's connection to this. Like, I think this is one of the famous applications, is like a cool, fun pocket knife.
Mm. Wait, question about Roger Sobey's name. Is it spelled S-O-B-E? And if so, is he an heir to the Sobey fortune?
Ooh.
It's not spelled that way, and he is the heir. He grappled his way to the top of the family. It's a whole Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I'm very curious. Did Roger Sobey, did he invent those glass gecko bottles for Sobey green tea?
I feel like people who were born after 2000 do not know what Sobey is. So we might have to.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They're parched and they're missing out. That's what I think.
Missing out on the milky pink liquid in a gecko bottle.
I guess I'll just tear up my 20 minutes on Surge soda.
Yeah. Ooh, time to retire.
Don't need
that.
This.
They're low energy and they're missing out. That's what I think. They're not surging. But yeah, and thank you both for thinking about this stuff, because I am very excited to dive into it. And usually we start with a set of fascinating numbers and statistics, but I think, like, with this topic, we should do a takeaway right away to get into just what it is. Like, I didn't really know. I had just heard of it. So let's get into takeaway number one. Stainless steel is a kind of steel with chromium in it. That's the chemistry here. Just right away, there is an exact definition of what stainless steel is, and it is chemically different from other steels. So this is not a made-up product. This is a real thing.
What is chromium?
Yeah, chromium is an element, and it's, let's see here, it's number 24 on the periodic table. It's it's a metallic element. It's gray. It's a shiny color. And the super basics of steel, which I also did not know very much about, like, steel is an alloy. It's a combination of metals. It's usually a bunch of iron and then something else. And if you add chromium to the steel-making process, you get a steel that has a lot of iron in it but doesn't rust very easily. It's very, very hard to make stainless steel rust at all.
Cool. I'm just, like, really into the name chromium. Like, I want to be, like, chromium man or something. It just sounds really cool to me for some reason.
Very futuristic, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know a ton about chromium, but I do know a ton about 2002 electro funk duo Chromio.
Last concert I went to before the pandemic
was Chromio.
No joke. Chromio.
Wow.
Okay. At any point, how many of their songs are about stainless steel? I have not listened to much Chromio.
Sadly, like, very little. a lot about funk and love and legs, but not a lot about stainless steel. But I think that they might, you know, it's an opportunity.
Okay. Let's see. Opening up an email. Dear Chromio.
Is the email address chromio@gmail.com?
I mean, probably. So my question, and Alex, you might have an answer for this, about, like, the creation of stainless steel. I feel like they're stronger metals and alloy metals. I think the origins of them are really interesting, because so much of this was just kind of figured out by accident. Like, I believe, like alloyed or strengthened iron or something like that was actually originally created, like, you know, thousands of years ago when regular old iron was being made, and then, like, some sort of food or organic matter or something like that was added to it for, like, ceremonial reasons. And then it actually strengthened the iron because, like, the carbon in whatever was kind of put in the iron actually just created some sort of alloy iron thing that, like, was 15% stronger or whatever. So it's the creation of stainless steel. Was it, like, a similar deal where they just, like, dropped something in steel and they were like, wait a second, this doesn't rust at all? Or what's the, how did they, was it purposeful or accidental, the creation of stainless steel?
Yeah, and Joey, that's exactly right. And the answer is really the second takeaway. So we'll get to that in a second, because the first thing is super interesting too. Like, steel, as you say, is thousands of years old, which a lot of us have, like, modern Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in our head for steel, but you know, like a big factory with big forges or something. But like you say, steel, in particular, carbon is often the thing getting mixed with iron and basic steel. And people have accidentally or on purpose made that for a long time all over the world. And one of the big limiting factors on just making steel in general was getting pure iron. And they think that some of the first pure iron people used was meteorites, like iron falling out of space because it was hard to get out of the ground, you know?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I've heard is like people would add, I want to credit this to indigenous people because I want to credit everything to indigenous people. But I think it was something like that where it was like somebody added meteorites to, you know, yeah, like to iron or some kind of metal. It was like kind of for ceremonial purposes as opposed to like for scientific purposes. And then it just made it stronger and created steel sort of accidentally.
Love this.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a lot of like there's no clear date when somebody developed steel, but it could have been anybody across the world. And it's just a situation of having those materials together and assembling them. And there's one article from The New Yorker I'm going to link because they, among other things, describe steel as being like high school chemistry. Like the actual process is relatively simple. It's just getting the stuff and doing it like skillfully is the tricky part.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, and thanks for like bringing that in because yeah, that's amazing. And yeah, Native people or other people in the world, like somebody somewhere was the first steel maker, but it's happened at least in small amounts everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I think we can kind of combine everything. I'm just going to jump straight into takeaway number two because this all adds up. Takeaway number two. Stainless steel was invented about 100 years ago, unless it was invented about 1,000 years ago.
So it's either really new or mediocre, kind of halfway new 1,000 years ago, because we've been around for, humans have been around for way longer than that. So like,
yeah,
I mean, what?
That's right. Yeah, I mean,
like everybody on this podcast, we're all like 100, right? Like steel's like barely our age.
Yeah, my middle name is Methuselah, so you.
That's a good 100-year-old person middle name.
Mine is Surge. I invented Surge. I'm that old,
yes,
and I did
Surge.
It way back when.
My
old
middle
man
name,
Surge.
My middle name is Joey. Teddy Roosevelt is currently alive and president, Clift.
Oh, very, very factual naming. Just
my parents, they were like, my parents also, my dad, when he gave me that knife, was 150 years old. Yeah. He was just like, what? Like, he opened up the newspaper and was like, this will be our child's middle name.
Wow. What if everybody's middle name was a topical event at the time? Like I was born at night and in March, and apparently part of the story is that people in the hospital were watching March Madness on the TVs. Like, so then my middle name is like Kentucky's on a run, huh? You know, just basketball bit.
Yeah, my middle name is we miss the Seattle Supersonics. So yes, I get it. Yes. Every time my name's said in Seattle, people get sad.
Supersonics. Supersonic.
Joey, your dad gives you the knife. He's like, go to Oklahoma City, get them back. Bring them back.
Yeah. It's like
Avenge us.
You know, and I was just like, you know I'm flying to England, right? And he's just like, I don't care.
He's like, give it back. Give me the knife back.
Well, and so stainless steel.
I want to know, when was stainless steel? What's this 1,000 years versus 100 years business?
Yeah, so there's like conventional wisdom about the invention of modern stainless steel in a mass-produced way. And then also there's a new study about an older origin of like a similar substance and also being, you know, manufactured the way things were manufactured 1,000 years ago. So we'll talk about both stories because I think there's a lot of parallel invention here is sort of the gist and applies to regular steel, too.
Cool.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
And one of the sources here is the City Museums of Sheffield, England, because stainless steel.
Bringing it back.
Yeah. Huh? Another one is the Automotive Hall of Fame in Dearborn, Michigan, and then a piece for The Guardian by Mark Miodinick, and then also a study in the Journal of Archaeological Science from 2020.
Can I just interject really quickly. As a librarian, I just love the fact that you state the sources up front. Thank you for that. That's like, you know, that's huge in this day and age. It really is. Thank you. It is.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It just feels easy to do. And yeah, people should get credit for all this research that I found.
Yeah. Yeah. And it adds validity to, like, you know, what you're saying, instead of just being like, hey, I read a headline and I, you know.
Yeah. According, like, so I think I might have read on Twitter a few days ago.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Who tweeted it out? I don't know. You asked too many questions. Sir, this is a deposition in court. You should know this stuff.
Sir, are you scrolling your phone below the little wooden thing that people sit in the witness box? Are you scrolling your phone?
No.
No.
What phone?
No.
No. Q, just, you know, he talks to me through my brain. So, you know. Oh,
man. Good old Q. Shout out Q. Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Oh, yikes.
I gotta go.
Yeah, I was never here. Smash my microphone.
Yeah, so these stories. The modern story, there's two main people who are, like, separately credited with coming up with stainless steel, and they did not work together. One of them was in Sheffield, England. His name's Harry Brearley, and he was a British metallurgist. In 1913, he was working at the Firth Brown Steel Company in Sheffield and discovered this, like, one leap that if you include chromium in steel making, you get a steel that does not rust. And that company was one of the first companies to initially call this rustless steel and then switch to the name stainless steel because it sold better. So around 1913, that's when this one guy of many invented it.
Ah, I mean, that makes sense. Rustless steel, now that you've said it, that does feel like rust to me feels like a 1913 problem. Like, I feel like
they
my
were having
and
a
I,
lot of problems in 1913. Let's be honest.
But, and the biggest of all, rust.
Rust.
No, I guess
rust
it's
was
just
huge.
Once again, this is probably not a good way to look at how I view the world, but it's just like, look, my friends don't talk about rust at all, but if we were alive in 1913, it would have been at the tip of our tongue every day. It was the talk. It was the talk of the town in the 1910s. Now we're talking about bitcoins.
Seriously, right. You guys didn't have, like, rust panic as a kid? Like, I feel like I would be out playing, and if I picked up any nail, my parents would freak out that I was going to get tetanus or something if it was rusty. Like, I was going to, like, eat it or whatever.
Oh.
But I swear it was, like, drilled in me to avoid rust at all cost.
Yeah, I feel like I remember that with punctures mainly, and then rust was, like, a secondary warning. Yeah. That was a big thing. Like, you'll immediately need a tetanus shot if anything causes any piercing on your body, which is probably safe. That's probably a good thing to do. But yeah,
I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I think that for me, like, I feel like tetanus was, like, the secondary thing, that it's sort of like, oh, if you stepped on a nail or something like that, it was like, oh, is that rusty? Oh, you should probably get a tetanus shot, as opposed to a general fear of all things rust.
I guess I just had some very cautious parents. Or I lived in a very rusty house. No stainless steel where I lived, just a rusty tin can.
Yeah, you lived in a pile of rust. Yeah.
Yes. I'm Oscar the Grouch. If you guys didn't know, just me and my rusty garbage can. But here's the thing. Why didn't they call it chrome steel? Like, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I think that is cool. Maybe they just thought stainless was even cooler. Like, it does sound like it's invincible or impervious in a way that is positive. But yeah, like, chromium is such a cool word. I am surprised I never hear it in the context of this thing. Yeah.
But I also wonder, like, how much in the public consciousness was chrome in 1913? Like, I feel like chrome, like, I understand chrome as a concept and what chrome is in 2022, but like, was it something like plastic or plutonium or whatever, where it's just like, oh, that sounds so futuristic to 1913 that it just doesn't have meaning, you know?
That's true. That's true. I feel like chrome had its heyday in the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like it was quietly laboring as cutlery. And then people were like, you're promoted to cars. You did it.
Yeah.
Get up there. Going to the bigs.
Yeah, like I get stainless because stainless sort of like stainless to me is, I think, something everybody could understand in that it's just like, oh, it's like it's a pot or a pan that doesn't stain. Got it. You know?
Yeah,
but it does.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, is that's the big lie I'm fighting.
Forget January 6th. It's that stainless steel. It stains.
I think your next guest, JFK Jr., will have something to say about this.
Oh, man.
I also think there was partly a sort of anarchic process of stainless steel becoming the name for this because so many people were coming up with it at the same time. Because then the other modern person here takes us to Kokomo, Indiana, which is a town in Indiana where inventor Elwood Haynes, right around that same year, 1913, is trying to develop metal alloys for car parts that will not rust. And he develops a couple of them, including stainless steel. And both Brearley and Haynes go on to earn fortunes from stainless steel production, especially for cutlery, like forks, knives, spoons. And then The Guardian also says there were French metallurgists and German metallurgists who also parallel invented this. And there were also previous people in the 1800s who came up with it, but did not mass produce it or did not like manufacture anything made of it. So kind of throughout the 1800s, early 1900s, this one idea keeps coming up.
Interesting.
I wonder if those people that refused to make more stainless steel, if they were like morally opposed to it, or if they were just big rust fans and they were like, the world can't know about this.
Big like, rust, you mean? Like big pharma, big rust is out there preventing stainless steel from gaining popularity.
Yeah, they were just, rust invented it. And they were like, yo, the world ain't ready.
Yeah. I'm thinking like, along with that rust panic idea, I feel like I've never heard a good word about rust in my entire life. No one has ever been like, oh, sick, rust. It's never been positive, ever.
Well, I hate to tell you guys, but I am going to be a bridesmaid in a wedding next month, and we are wearing rust, surprisingly.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh, like the color.
The color.
That
We're not
good.
Wearing rusty gowns, just the rust color.
It's like everybody has necklaces made out of rusty nails.
Can you imagine?
I mean, I guess I'd want to meet that bride and groom.
It's a steampunk wedding. No, no, like literally we're wearing the color rust. It's like a burnt orange type of thing.
That's a great color. That sounds really good. Yeah.
It's a pretty color. It is. I mean, actual rust is not that great looking, but you know, the color is nice.
I mean, I think for me, I think that rust has its value in breaking down material that is foreign to the environment that it's in. So I know like the Titanic, which is, you know, the Titanic from the movie. It's currently in the process of, you get it, the famous one. It's currently in the process of collapsing due to like rust eating it. And the thought is that like, you know, once it collapses, it'll like return a lot of those materials to the bottom of the seafloor where like it can actually be used productively by like plants and animals down there in a way that like a big hulking ship probably couldn't be, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's all circle of life stuff.
Here's this may be a silly question, but what is rust and how does stainless steel with chromium prevent it from happening?
That's a perfect question. Yeah, so rust is a thing where any amount of iron reacts with oxygen or water, and then it degrades and corrodes. And it turns out that chromium as an element, like when it's added to steel, it very, very easily creates a protective film around the iron. And so that's a barrier between the iron and any oxygen or water that's trying to get to it. And
So it's coated.
Yeah. And one of the sources is it's a piece for Scientific American by metallurgical engineer Michael L. Free from the University of Utah. He says that chromium forms this very, very easily. It only takes a few atomic layers to reduce the corrosion to super low levels. So this is like stainless steel is not just flashy branding or something. It is actually like a useful process. And
cool.
Apparently for something to be called stainless steel, it has to be at least 10% chromium. Like there's even an official level that you have to reach to be the real product.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
I
so
did not know that.
Looking into because I'm a big dummy. I assumed that it was, like a living creature or something like that, like a bacteria. It's a chemical reaction, actually. So, crust. Oh, I'm sorry. I should have. Sorry, right. I didn't mean to swear. Sorry.
But wait, no. So shouldn't rust be?
And it's like, it is easy to think of it as like biological decay. It's just chemical. It's sort of like chemical decay, if you want to call it that. But for iron.
Ah.
Yeah, and this like neat. This leap, people were very excited about it because. Like with steel production, the most standard kind is a steel that's like 98 or 99% iron and then a tiny bit of carbon. But you can add all kinds of other stuff. And so stainless steel, this big, very purposeful addition of chromium made it a totally different thing. According to UC Berkeley materials science and engineering professor Thomas Devine, the most popular stainless steels are 18% chromium, 8% nickel. And then a few other things like manganese or silicon or molybdenum. These are all various elements, but there's a lot of chemistry going on there. And, good for them.
Yeah.
My question about stainless steel with multiple people inventing it at the same time, did they all call it stainless steel? Were there any like cute sub names that people were trying to push to brand themselves as different, like diet steel or something like that?
Oh, clear. Clear steel.
Yeah, clear steel. Yeah, crystal steel. Yeah.
Steel crystal.
Yeah. Steel extreme.
Yeah.
Man, off of crystal steel, you're not going to believe this, but most of the bonus show is about Pepsi, for real. We'll talk about it.
Nice. Really yeah, thing. A little tie-in.
The main one was Rustless Steel, and it seems like in particular these Sheffield, England companies, like was and is a center of stainless steel production. And so they, through their success selling it, they seem to have really made stainless steel a thing.
I'm also fascinated why 1913? Like, is it just because it's industrial age and everybody's working with steel? So they're just trying to, everybody's just has their hands in the pot. It feels like it's weird that it's that year in particular that all these people are coming up with stainless steel.
Yeah, it's everything you said. And then also, if people have heard the episode about car horns, we talk about the right around 1910 being the start of a huge ramping up of car production. And so inventors like Elwood Haynes are saying, how can I come up with better car parts all of a sudden?
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then like beyond the relatively recent people, about 100 years ago, there's also a new study that says some people in what's now modern Iran might have been making it about 1,000 years ago. This is a study. It was published September 2020 in the Journal of Archaeological Science. It was a team from University College London and the University of Cambridge. And West Asia was a big center of steel production before the like Andrew Carnegie steel mill type era. Like there was the city of Damascus was famous for steel, and there were other steel makers there. And archaeologists read about a place called Chahak in modern Iran, where they produced a mysterious compound called Rusaktaj, and that translates as the burnt. And so they went there, they studied what they could find, they did radiocarbon dating and scanning electron microscopy analysis, and they found small amounts of chromium in the waste charcoal from the 900s, the 1000s, the 1100s. So they think stainless steel of some kind might have been made there like 1,000 years before these other people.
Wow. Way better name, too.
Yeah.
Than what we got now.
Let's get Rusaktaj going. Yeah. Shoot.
Yes. I would love those pans. Give me a Rusaktaj.
Something I'm always excited about is I feel like we have like a really big recency bias as like a people of assuming that like the current present day, everybody's a genius and hundreds of years ago, everybody was dumb as hell. And and it's like, that's for sure true in a lot of ways. But I think that like things like this that point to like, yeah, for sure, they figured this out. Like they figure out the chemical reactions in biology, or biology isn't the right word for it, but the chemistry of this, yeah, 1,000 years ago, clearly. I mean, I think that like we're still learning things from like Roman aqueduct builders that clearly like knew how to do this stuff on a high level and had figured the science of it out. It's just that like the books where they wrote this down in didn't survive or something like that. You know, I think that
100.
Yeah, like yeah. I think that we don't give the past enough credit for being full of, you know, super intelligent people that directly already invented things that we consider modern marvels, you know?
That's dead on.
Right. I mean, everybody, there's been studies that show human anatomy has not changed. Like once we became Homo sapiens, we haven't changed. So literally ancient humans were just like us in old, you know,
right,
in a hut somewhere. So it's like, why wouldn't we come up with this back then? So I 100% agree that like, due to wars and maybe environmental disasters and, you know, bias of like he who won the victory, we lose a lot. So it makes total sense that stainless steel was created 1,000 years ago and then, you know, some catastrophe happened and then it was lost and then we had to figure it out again.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with this specific process, raw materials are such a necessity. So like you've also got people who maybe would have thought of this, just didn't have chromium on hand. Like this discovery was always sort of on the tip of our brains. And then various people kept coming up with it. Yeah. Good for us as a society.
Yeah,
yay,
we did
humans.
It.
Humans.
Yay. Now I kind of want to just take, I mean, if that's how we're going to play as a species, now I kind of want to just take old inventions and just say I invented them. Just like,
yeah.
Hey, everybody, you know what the wheel is. Check out the wheel too. And then everybody will be like, will be like, oh, whoa, the 2022 wheel is out.
No, we got to do it with things that like Gen Z doesn't know, you know, like. Sobe, invent Sobe again, Sobe. You know?
And look, then, listener of the show, Roger Sobe, will be very mad that I stole his idea of his family's livelihood.
Yeah. His father gives him a knife. You two meet. It's a battle. And then, you know, we see what happens.
A battle for the creation of Sobe. Yeah, I'd do that. That sounds fun.
You know, that's a great Highlander spin off.
Yeah. You bring your knife and your family's recipe of Sobe, and I'll bring mine. I'll be hopped up on cool, sweet green tea and with a knife.
I'll be on the side with my Arizona watching.
Oh, yeah. The true wonder is how those are still 99 cents, right? How do they do it, Arizona?
How?
Next thing here is a big trumpet sound for a big takeaway. Before that, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
I think I'm going to do the last takeaway for the main episode, and then we'll finish with some numbers and stats, because this flows very nicely. Takeaway number three. Stainless steel changed the whole flavor experience of cutlery-based eating.
What? Okay, wait, you got to unpack
like,
that.
Like, we can taste it? What's happening?
Yeah, so this is a pretty simple story, and the main source is a Guardian piece by Mike Miodinick from the previous takeaway. But stainless steel is something we don't taste when we're eating our food, and a lot of the previous metal cutlery, you know, the metal and like a tangy or weird flavor from the metal would get into your food as you ate. So once we had stainless steel cutlery, people were like, oh, this is incredible. My food just tastes like the food. This is so cool.
That makes a lot of sense, because I got some like silver, like actual silver silverware and heirloom type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I tried to eat with it once in my 20s, trying to be fancy, and I hated it.
Cool.
And that makes a lot of sense. Like, stainless steel is literally like a nothing. Like, it's not even that it has a good weight. You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't taste like anything. Whereas like that silver, I was like, what, why do people, I never put two and two together. That's amazing.
That is. I've never eaten with silver, like actual silverware before. I was curious if either of you had. Yeah.
It ain't great.
I've only eaten with silver when I was afraid of werewolves. I'm just like, oh, I gotta eat with silver just in case.
You're trying to eat a food made of werewolf and it keeps dissolving or burning away or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's the thing. That's the reason I was afraid of werewolves is I ate a werewolf baby and I was just like, oh, the mom's really not gonna be happy about this.
But you were hungry.
That is really interesting. That's something that I'm definitely like a newbie when it comes to cooking and, you know, fine dining. But something that I really love are like all the little things that can influence how a food tastes, how it tastes. Mm. And, you know, I think that there is something to like, you know, if you eat something that was entirely prepared for and served on like wooden tools and wooden instruments and stuff like that, it definitely has just like the slightest woody taste. Like, you know, I feel like there's in some, I think specifically like a lot of like European cultures, there is a feeling of you don't like wash your cutlery because the, you know, the fats and things like that have like baked into it over the times you've eaten it are like part of what influences the taste of the next things.
Like a cast iron skillet.
Yeah. Like a cast iron skillet. Like, I think that there is definitely something to like, you know, stainless steel is like, oh, this is the food without any of that being added to it. But I do think that there is something like cool and special about like, you know, eating food that was only cooked and produced using like stone tools and stuff like that. You know, it's just a different like way to kind of enjoy food. And it's like part of the process of, you know, eating and tasting good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And yeah, that really fits into the whole history of this too. Cause also if folks remember the episode of this show about spoons, we talked a little bit about early spoons being like the early, early, early version being like a piece of wood someone found or a seashell or you know, just some item that could scoop. This story is pretty specific to the history of people using metal to be a food-eating implement. The biggest example of that taste getting into stuff is actual silverware. Even though I was raised using the word silverware for cutlery, never had any made of silver, and apparently that gives food like a sour taste or a like tang from the metal. Mm-hmm. And in 1743, cutlers in Sheffield, because it's been a big metal production place, they made the first major batches of silver-plated cutlery it was popular because it was so beautiful, but it also added that taste to food. And from then, inventors were trying to figure out, hey, what's a metal we can use that won't make the food taste different? And stainless steel was the first big breakthrough that was popular and well-liked. And, you know, a lot of stainless steel stuff looks silvery in the color sense, partly because it's sort of imitating that funny tasting but still beloved version of cutlery from before.
I'm just really tripped out how I've never thought and put two and two together that when you eat with a metal fork, it doesn't taste metal.
Yeah.
That's like something that I've never, like, I guess just have always taken for granted, because like I would never just like lick, you know, the side of like a computer or like, you know, something else that's metal, because I don't want that metal taste. And that's weird. But here I am, like I go to eat my like ramen and I grab a metal fork and it doesn't taste metal. That's something that my brain literally has never connected.
I think it's also acknowledging that like a metal taste is a taste. Like there is, and like, yeah, that is something that like you just don't pick up on if you're like, you know, like licking a fork after eating a really good meal or something like that, is that like, yeah, there's just no taste to it. It's not like sterile, it's just nothing.
Right.
I guess that is, yeah.
Yeah. And that was when when that first came out as a thing, people were like, this is science fiction. This is incredible. Like how did this happen? Because they had searched for something that could do that for a long time. And apparently the one other metal that was a candidate before stainless steel was aluminum. And especially the mid-1800s in France, the French emperor, Napoleon III, he tried to popularize aluminum cutlery. And it does not really give you too much flavor, but it becomes discolored pretty quickly. And so people thought that was just way less appealing of an experience than silver. And they stuck with silver for a while.
Oh, wow. Bougie.
Aluminum cutlery. I'm just going to say aluminum cutlery is the Zune of the 1800s. I remember Microsoft Zune, everybody. Remember the iPod replacement? Microsoft tried to make a thing.
This is how you, that's your invention. Nobody remembers Zune. So now you can come back with the new Zune.
I wonder if people, I mean, I don't know, it's like you kind of look at technological advancements now as like, you know, something like the iPod or the iPhone, where there's clearly like copycats that come out around the same time that are trying to like kind of swap up the smartphone market while it's becoming a thing, but they don't totally take off. Like HD DVDs would be another example of that, that like tried to be a competitor for Blu-ray. I wonder if they, and like, I feel like as a dork, I would like see HD DVDs and be like, bah, that'll never last. I wonder if they had a similar attitude in the 1800s with like aluminum cutlery, where they were just like,
you know, like, they did. Like, you know, you go into somebody's house and you go, oh, Nancy doesn't have stainless steel. She has aluminum. And people are like, oh my God, Nancy.
Yeah, it's like, what, somebody backed the wrong horse.
I know.
Yeah, I think there were like sets of these various things. Yeah, people were, it really reminds me of my friend's dad, who continued to have a massive Laserdisc collection because he had just invested.
Oh, yeah.
And he had like custom wooden shelves to display all the different Laserdiscs on one wall, you know. And so once you're in that far, the rest of the people have the thing that they use. And then you're just like, no, I still like aluminum cutlery. It's great. Yeah. I bought 1,000 of it, so I'm still into it. I decided that's for me.
Sticking to it. There's... Napoleon said so. So I am sticking to it.
Yeah. I'm sure there was like one family that was just like, we're an aluminum cutlery family. Get that stainless steel spoon out of my house.
Embarrassing.
Like one kid snuck in some stainless steel, but they're faking. So they're like, yum, yum, aluminum, yum, yum. Like they're trying to eat in an aluminum looking way, you know?
Yeah. I can't wait until this stains.
Yeah.
And the dad snatches it out of the kid's hand and is just like, wait a second. There's no green stains here at all. This is stainless steel, isn't it? No, Dad, it's aluminum.
Yeah. The craziest thing is my brain just keeps imagining how light it is, because that's all I think about with aluminum is like aluminum foil. So I'm just imagining these utensils just crumpling in hand.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is yeah, you go to like cut something with aluminum and the knife just collapses.
Yeah.
Right. And kind of with that, then according to Mark Miodinek, and it makes sense to me, the other like big rival that came along for stainless steel was after it was invented, which was plastic. Like around the mid-1900s, they were making so much stuff out of plastic. Apparently for a while, it looked like plastic cutlery would take over, but that stuff was considered to be less attractive looking than stainless steel. And also over time, we've become more concerned with the environmental impact of plastic. Not that steel is great, but plastic is tough too. And so, you know, there hasn't really been a big rival other than like the very newest, like, you know, you can get reusable cutlery made out of bamboo and to like carry around with you. There are alternatives, but stainless steel is still on top for now.
I don't see it going anywhere, honestly. But I know in like 10 years, I'm going to sound like, hopefully, it's gonna age poorly, like my tweets being like, calm down guys, this COVID thing is whatever.
Yeah, just like it's a this is gonna be a weird 2 weeks, everybody, as you tweet in March of 2020.
I know,
right? How's everybody gonna pass the next 48 hours of this being a thing? And yeah, that was not,
I know,
not how it went.
So, you know, yeah. My like, I don't see stainless steel going anywhere. Who knows at this point? Virtual forks.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I do. Look, I'd eat with a metaphor. A metaphor sounds fun.
You know, the prongs would be a little M shape, like a letter M shape, just to be cute. You know it. You know they would do
hell
it.
Yeah.
It's that infinity symbol where we can't pick up anything with it.
Look, I'm just saying, I'm retaining my thought that stainless steel is a garbage metal for jerks, so I can't wait until it's replaced.
As you go to pick up your wooden pot. Oh, man.
I like that we're closing with the stats and numbers this week, because there's just a couple of them, and they're all about the future, or you know, very modern stuff, so this is very exciting. And the closing segment this week is a set of fascinating numbers and statistics. This week, that's in a segment called Hey, SifPod Listeners, Stats, 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 Stats and Numbers Style. And that was to the tune of Gangnam Style, referencing things. That was submitted by Alex Wade. Thank you, Alex. We have a new name for this segment every week. Please make them as silly and wacky as possible. Submit to SifPod on Twitter or to SifPod@gmail.com. And this week is at the end.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of how does the rest of that go? The Gangnam Style, stats and numbers, stats, 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 oopa, stats and numbers. Yeah, it's like, how does the rest of that song go to continue that?
Yeah, I believe quite a bit of it is in Korean, and I don't know it. So, I don't know. Yeah, that would be very challenging for me. But yeah.
Hey, what is your favorite stats and numbers parody that you've done so far?
Oh, no, I can't choose. And shout out to listener Xander. He made a Spotify playlist of all the actual songs they reference. So
nice.
I really appreciate that. Well, it's linked for people. Yeah. But there's just a couple numbers here. The first one also ties to music. The first number is 200,000. 200,000. That is the number of stainless steel pint glasses purchased by the 2016 Glastonbury Festival in the UK.
What? At the festival, they have stainless steel glasses?
Yeah, they do.
Fancy. That's like, wow.
So... My initial thought when you said that they bought 200,000 stainless steel cups for the Glastonbury Festival is I thought you said they bought 200,000 stainless steel cups for the Glass and Berry Festival. Oh. So I was just like, whoa.
Oh.
Why don't they have glass cups at the Glass and Berry Festival?
you got to put the glass and the berries into something. Yeah, and it's a stainless steel cup.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Here's your cup of glass and berries.
You know,
together at last.
For a festival like that, the world is your oyster.
Yeah.
But okay, I do have to say, whenever I, and the only places that I've ever gotten a stainless steel like tumbler cup have been like Korean food restaurants, like a Korean food barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
I will go and I'll get like a frosty stainless steel cup. And I feel like it's the highest of luxury.
It's pretty nice.
Because it is cold and frosty. It really retains the coolness of the beverage. So get me to Europe to go to that festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think about mud and like people with like cool shag haircuts walking around in mud. Those are the only pictures that I see of that festival. So it's nice to know that they have a little bit of,
right,
a little bit of something else going on.
My takeaway, which I have not partaken in a while, is like a Denny's shake. If you get like a strawberry shake at Denny's, they give you like the leftovers in like a steel cup.
Yes.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this festival, I think they oddly did it not for like, it's the nicest way to keep a drink cold kind of reasons. And this is, this is a massive music and arts festival in the UK. It's called Glastonbury. It usually runs about 5 days. And in the run-up to the 2016 Fest, they ordered 200,000 stainless steel pint glasses instead of plastic or whatever else. And the two reasons they did that, one is sustainability. People at the festival, they were allowed to buy a glass for just £5, British pounds. And then they could swap that glass for clean glasses for their next drinks. They could also keep or return the glass. Like, they just wanted to not use a bunch of plastic. So that was one reason. Wow. And then the other reason is they wanted to support the British steel industry. Like, the festival director explicitly said, we're doing this to boost like steel production in Birmingham. This was designed in Sheffield. We hope other businesses and events like join us in promoting British steel production. So it's like an economic pride thing they did.
I'm kind of into that.
Yeah.
Especially the first one.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah, that's dope. I don't hate that.
Cool.
Yeah, it just seems great. Yeah, I've never been to that festival, but it's, yeah, it's, I think it's as you described, Nineke, like people in fields with a lot of weird clothes for an entire week.
Like Sienna Miller, like walking around in mud.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to like the drums or whatever. I don't know. That's what I feel.
Yeah, every event to be seen at in all of Britain, I do imagine Sienna Miller specifically hanging out there. Wow.
Yeah. She's there. She's there. Yeah.
And the British tabs can't get enough. They can't get enough. They're freaking out. Oh, Sienna. No. Wow.
They can't. What is she up to lately?
Yeah. Wait, what's that glass she's drinking out of made of? That's not plastic.
Steel, you say? Stainless steel?
Yeah. Flash photo, flash photo, flash photo. Ah, I'm being blinded because steel's reflective.
Oh, yeah. When the, speaking of shininess, next number is $2,800 US. $2,800. That is the price one homeowner in the New York City borough of Queens paid to add a stainless steel fence, handrails, door, and awning to his home. Spent close to $3,000 on a bunch of stainless steel for the exterior of the home.
Someone thinks they're fancy.
You know what I call that price? A steal.
No.
Just kidding. He overspent. Stainless steel.
Why is my question.
and the thing is, and I live in Brooklyn currently. I haven't been here a long time, but I feel like this has been happening without me noticing. Apparently, this is a major trend in specifically the Flushing neighborhood of Queens and the Sunset Park neighborhood of Brooklyn, which is not my neighborhood. But apparently, specific communities there are buying stainless steel fencing as a status symbol. That's a relatively recent phenomenon, and it's in particular Asian American migrants. They also tend to be middle class immigrants to the U.S. And then this is also spread to Caribbean American communities. Like, there's specific...
Oh, no, my people.
Oh, yeah? Okay, there you go.
Yeah. I gotta ask. I'll ask around in my family. I'll be like, what are your thoughts on stainless steel? Have you gotten offense in stainless steel?
I mean, yeah.
Maybe I'll put a fence in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. I'll put a stainless steel fence. I'll bring it over here.
Could
to represent
it.
Jamaica.
There you go. Apparently people like The Shine, and also it's like both a cool, almost futuristic looking thing, and also it needs less upkeep than other kinds of fencing. And this like could have happened at any time in the past 100 years. It's just lately it's been a trend and a thing that's going on with specific communities in these parts of New York City.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, because like iron fences rust, whereas this would not.
It's like apply the cutlery thing to your entire exterior fence of your home. Great. Yeah, you're all set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I am tired of...
Time to lick some fences.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm tired when I lick a fence and it has a metal taste. So this just solves that problem. You know?
When I'm serving my jerk chicken on my fence, I don't want the metal taste to come through.
Yeah. And there's one last number for this main episode here. Last number, it's another amount of money. It's $130,000 US. $130,000. That is the auction price that was paid for one fireproof copy of the book The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
Oh, I saw this in the news. That was made out of stainless steel?
Partly, yeah. The binding, a lot of it was aerospace grade stainless steel.
Wow.
For a book. And as a like fundraiser. That was what they did.
Oh, neat.
That's interesting. Yeah, now I'm just kind of Googling unburnable copy of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, there's like a badass picture of her, of Margaret Atwood, like using a flamethrower on it.
Oh, I see that. That's dope. Yeah, I guess the only...
We'll have a link for you. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the only burn-proof book that I've heard of before this is like, I think Fahrenheit 451, there's like a couple of burn-proof copies of that floating around. That's dope.
Very on the nose.
Yeah, it's like, so on the nose, it doesn't even count as a metaphor. It's just the thing.
I know, we get it.
Like, Handmaid's Tale I get because, like, yeah, you know, it's like that does make sense as a book you really want to preserve. But it's like, Fahrenheit 451, it's like about that. So yeah, it's like, shut up, dude.
Yeah, it's not explicitly about.
Yeah. Like if they should go the other way with Fahrenheit 451 and make a hyper flammable copy of it.
That, yes. Because like, then it really, I love that actually, because then you actually have to preserve it as well as you, it's just like made out of kindling.
Yeah.
And you have to like put it in the wettest, moisture rich place in your house.
Yeah, it's like, if the temperature goes over 96 degrees, that book's just going to violently explode.
Yeah, I know.
Right, and that one is called Fahrenheit 96. It's like, look out. Here's a warning.
Yeah. If you hold it in your hand too long, be careful because your body temperature is over its burning point.
Yep. You are now a part of that fireman group or
reading it with tongs and stuff. That's fun to me. Just like imagining that.
That's funny. It's a good one.
But yeah. And this was like a charity stunt that went very well. This is super recent. This was June of 2022. Sotheby's auctioned the copy, and the proceeds went to PEN America, which is a writer's organization, and they wanted to highlight recent book banning in the United States that they oppose. PEN says that just in 2021, over 1,500 titles got banned. That was across 86 school districts in 26 U.S. states. And so they got together with Margaret Atwood, and they said, hey, let's do a thing for it. And people can see the picture that we'll have linked, which is from a video of 82-year-old Margaret Atwood operating a flamethrower and dousing this book in fire. And because it's made of aluminum and nickel and aerospace-grade stainless steel, it does not burn.
That's awesome.
I love it.
It rules.
So cool.
Okay, so this is probably the wrong conversation sidetrack to take off of this. But Alex, if you could pick one state that this podcast would be burned, would be banned in, which state would it be?
Ooh, spicy, spicy topic, spicy hot topic. Speaking of which,
as you scroll through the analytics of like which state doesn't listen to this podcast that much.
Man, I'm gonna look up the number later because like. Long, long ago, I did a little membership drive right when it started, and I did little stats on how many U.S. states there was a patron from, and there were a few that had no patrons, and I kept it to myself, but I was like,
"That's what you
come
get.
On, small state. There were usually small states with not a lot of people, but
come on, Montana, you can pony up.
Yeah.
Montana's not that small.
But I mean, in terms of population, not in terms of like size,
This is true. Okay, this is true. Yes.
Yeah. And shout out to, I mean, this was more than a year ago. There are probably more now. But at the time, there were two people whose addresses were Armed Forces PO boxes. So shout out to you folks. That rules. Good job.
Ah.
Keep it up.
Yeah. Nice.
And Montana, we have a vendetta. Back to Joey's question. Joseph Montana. Folks, that is the main episode for this week. My thanks to Joey Clift and Aneke Fitz-Clark for having a surprisingly strong relationship to stainless steel knives and to literal silverware. Anyway, I said that's the main episode because there is more secretly incredibly fascinating stuff available to you right now. If you support this show on Patreon.com, patrons get a bonus show every week where we explore one obviously incredibly fascinating story related to the main episode. This week's bonus topic is Pepsi-Soviet relations. That's right, Pepsi-Soviet relations, and that has more to do with steel than you might think. Visit sifpod.fun for that bonus show, for a library of more than 8 dozen other bonus shows, and to back this entire podcast operation. If you've heard recent episodes, you know we've finished up a membership drive in the run-up to episode 100. There's still a bunch of great stuff coming kind of all the time and a bunch of stuff you can get from that drive. So still a need, still a wish, please give it consideration at sifpod.fun. And thank you for exploring stainless steel with us. Here's one more run through the big takeaways. Takeaway number one, stainless steel is a kind of steel with chromium in it. Takeaway number two, stainless steel was invented about 100 years ago, unless it was invented about 1,000 years ago. And takeaway number three, stainless steel changed the whole flavor experience of eating with metal cutlery. Those are the takeaways. Also, please follow my guests. They're great. You can follow Joey Clift on Twitter at JoeyTainment or follow him on Instagram at Joey Clift. That is Clift with many, many I's. Both of those are going to be linked in the show links. You don't need to spell anything right now. Joey is also a writer on Spirit Rangers, a new animated show coming to Netflix later this year, 2022. And then his short film is called My First Native American Boyfriend that is currently screening at film festivals all over the place. And then Aneke Fitz-Clark was recently the co-host of Minority Corner with main host James Arthur M. That was on Maximum Fun, amazing network, amazing podcast, 350 good episodes for you to check out right there. And follow Aneke on Instagram. She is at Aneke. That is spelled N-N-E-K-A-Y, just like Joey's handles that's linked in the show links. Follow Aneke there for new updates and more. Many research sources this week. Here are some key ones. And probably the most key source was Scientific American, wonderful magazine and website, in particular pieces there by University of Utah metallurgical engineer Michael L. Free and by UC Berkeley materials science and engineering professor Thomas Devine. Also got a lot of background from a book called Steel, From Mine to Mill, that's by writer Brooke C. Stoddard. And then more stuff from NPR, The New York Times, Atlas Obscura. Find those and many more sources in this episode's links at sifpod.fun. And beyond all that, our theme music is Unbroken, Unshaven by the Budos Band. Our show logo is by artist Burton Durand. Special thanks to Chris Souza for audio mastering on this episode. Extra, extra special thanks go to our patrons. I hope you love this week's bonus show. And thank you to all our listeners. I'm thrilled to say we will be back next week with more secretly incredibly fascinating. So how about that? Talk to you then.